This is Eric Kluber, and you're listening to Victor Ruiz on Signals from Mars.
He's back. Not the man behind the mask. Not Alice Cooper. It is Eric Kluber, person that's been on the show the most. At least him and John Bush have been on the show the most. How about that? Cool to hook up with Eric again. And a great conversation, as always, with Mr. Kluber. That is up next.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
So as mentioned at the beginning, it is awesome to have Eric back. He was on episode number one. He's been on, I don't know how many shows, every time that he's released something more or less, whether it's been White Wizard, Gypsy Hawk, Iron Knot, Void Vader, and Society One. He's been on the show to talk about his projects. Still with Society One, doing some stuff with White Wizard as well. So we're going to get into that shortly. And again, he's always been great to the show. He's always brought about a great conversation, always fun to talk to. I've talked to him a bunch over the years offline via Facebook and stuff like that. He also gives lessons. So that's something that we didn't bring up this time, but I know that that he does that frequently. He actually recorded the interview from his practice space where he does give people classes. So if you do want to hook up with Eric for guitar lessons, he is available. Also, wanted to mention real quick, always bang the drum on Patreon and all that stuff and how you guys can support the show via merch or Amazon links or all this stuff or that stuff. Started signing up to some different accounts on Patreon just to see what other people are doing and also to show support to other shows that I love. And I came across a pretty interesting stat. Since I've started on Patreon, I have posted 5,270 posts on Patreon. Not to toot my own horn, but that's pretty cool when that number came up. What that means is that I try to deliver as much as possible on Patreon. I try to give people, I always think of the old Kiss analogy. We were putting the band together and trying to give people the band that we wanted to see on stage. Well, my Patreon is kind of the same. I've always wanted it to be something that people really enjoy. Yes, I post a lot of videos, but I think a lot of the small tribe that I do have on there are into that. They're into the posting of the videos, into chatting about the songs, being turned on to music. And there are people that listen to everything but just don't comment on it. And there are others that comment on absolutely everything. And I've mentioned this a bunch. One of the greatest things that I can hear is, yeah, my wife's pissed off because thanks to you, I picked up these five albums this month. You know, so knowing that what I'm doing with trying to promote new music from new bands, from old bands, from whatnot is working. Patreon is $2 a month. You can also sign up for free for a week for free. You don't get the Victor M. Ruiz podcast with that. But if the rest entices you, if you like the banter going back and forth, that podcast is usually weekly. And when I don't post it on a weekly basis, I do try to make up with it with extra long episodes or behind the scenes stuff. So definitely check it out. One-stop shopping place for everything Signals from Mars is signalsfrommars.com. And that's pretty much it, folks. Thanks for joining me today. Let's get on with the interview with Eric. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today, the guy that's been on the show the most times out of anyone, it is Mr. Eric Kluber. He was guest number one, and he's here on episode, this is going to be 400 and something, 406, I think. So
awesome. You're getting up there, dude.
Yeah, yeah. 15 years. So,
oh, yeah. Good to see you, Victor.
Yeah, good to see you too, Eric. Eric has always been a friend of the show since day one. And, you know, anytime that I can have him back on and just talk some music, talk some metal, it just all works out.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. Thanks for having me back on, and got some things happening in the near future that, you know, I wanted to talk with you about.
Okay, cool. The first thing that kind of jumped out at me, a few months ago, we kind of talked online about this, where all of a sudden there was a announcement related to a vinyl that's over here on my shoulder.
I see it. Yeah. No one saw that one coming, including me.
Yeah. So, go ahead. White Wizard.
White Wizard. Yeah. I've been jamming with John and Chad again. And it happened almost a year ago where Chad reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested in jamming with John. Things are cool now. And I hadn't spoken with either of them for years, probably at least 5 years. And so they didn't know where I was at, but they wanted to get together and see if we could hash things out. So we did. And we met up in North Hollywood and rolled through a couple over the top songs, you know, and maybe High Speed GTO. And I was like interested to jam with the guys at the time, and it went great. It was just the three of us, and they didn't know, neither of them knew that, like, I've been sober for years now. And that was something that they were kind of like tiptoeing around and see, they didn't know where I was at, if I was full blown like Chris Holmes style, or if I would, what was going on, you know, if I still had it together. And so that kind of took one of the big problems that band had, you know, and it just wasn't an issue at all. So like the fact that, well, we can just jam, and which we always just jammed, you know, but like that was something they were worried about. And for them to not even have that in the equation kind of made things pretty easy for us to move forward, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was great, you know, and we've been jamming since and gone through a couple of possible like renditions of the band. And you probably saw the video that we were looking for a singer.
Right.
Right. And so where we're at right now is there's the possible reunion with one of the singers of the band. And, you know, it's when the guys are ready to let the cat out of the bag, we'll do that. But so we're moving forward, and there's some potential of getting some White Wizard out live again. And then we'll take it from there, where we could maybe have some more music in the future. But one, I guess, you know, cliche, one step at a time. That's what's up with White Wizard. So me, John, and Chad are jamming, and been jammed with some different drummers, and are talking to some different singers, or maybe just one different singer.
Okay. And as far as is the idea to just go out and play shows and see where that takes you guys, are you guys looking the right material
right now? I think it's safer to say shows first and then see what happens. I'd really like to see it go back and write some music, and music like the three of us were obviously part of the over the top lineup. Mm-hmm. And that style of White Wizard, it's gone through so many band members and so many different sounds. Each lineup had a different sound to it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I like the sound of the over the top stuff, which wasn't overly technical, And I would love to write music in that vein. So I hope it does go there. But first, we'd have to kind of like prove to ourselves and the world with some live performances. So that's where we're at right now.
Okay. And given that there isn't really, it doesn't seem like there's the same emergency on your end either, or the band's end, to really need to go out and do additional stuff beyond that.
I always like to see things go further. It's just not, it's whatever's realistic. That's what we have to work okay. with. You know, people are spread out, lives, like I swear everyone's life in general in the world is more complex than ever. Getting people in the same room seems harder than ever to work towards a common goal. What opportunities are really out there? It's always kind of talk until it really happens.
Right.
And then on our end, we'd have to, you know, get on that stage. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what the best thing to concentrate on at the beginning. So yeah, the world of rock and roll is so unstable. Let's see where it's happening. I mean, it's still in the stages of we get together and we jam, and we've been jamming with different people and tried some different possibilities for the lineup, which are still not set in stone, mm-hmm. which could still go in a couple directions depending on, you know, what life throws at everyone involved.
Right.
But right now we're looking at doing some sort of live performances, like in approximately like a year, I think would be a good timeline.
Okay.
And I hope it happens. I'm here to do it. And John, Chad, and I have been getting together pretty regularly, meaning like a couple times a month, you know. So in the rock and roll, like back in the day, you know, everyone thought that bands practiced like every single day and every night, and I think that was like a big exaggeration. Mm-hmm. But nowadays I feel like, yeah, bands getting together like a couple times a month, that's like actually a good consistency for things to move forward and being realistic about things.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. You Or at least me, I talk to people that get back together with bands and instantly they're already thinking, well, you know, we're going to be touring this and we're going to be doing that. And then our idea is to go back into the studio with so-and-so. And it's like, that's cool. But realistically, you know, 2025, does that make sense from an economic standpoint, from a, you know?
Yeah, that's the hard thing, is all the logistics of putting things together. So you can talk all day long with your ideas and you can try and go in that direction, but what actually pans out is well, you'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So to get too far ahead of yourself is you're just kind of talking shit.
Yeah. And how hard is that if you've got people coming at you, like promoters or different people trying to get you guys to hook you in to do a tour or to do this or to do that? You know,
that would be cool. I mean, everyone, it's on every end. Like, no one seems to commit, like promoters. And then you have like various industry people, whoever's left, it's on them as well. Everyone gives like these really wish-washy answers, you know,
right.
Nothing's as secure. Like maybe back, you could just like line up, lock in a bunch of dates that you could work towards. And everyone's like, oh, that sounds good. And that's maybe. So it's like a lot of talk that mm-hmm. you're working with a lot of intangibles. So the first step is just to see if everyone's getting along and is down to do this. And the next step is like making it happen. And then like we're talking to someone who's pretty cool. I wish I could drop a little bit more. There is a potential to do a pretty fucking cool American show that happens once a year mm-hmm. and be a part of that. So that's like a good realistic goal to work towards, and they'd be stoked to have us. Mm-hmm. And then from there, then you take it from there regarding tour, album and all that.
Yeah. 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 That makes sense. And mm-hmm. let's be honest with the way that the business is. I remember years ago, there were people that would say to me on the old Talking Metal forums where we met. Metallica's washed up. They're only playing festival dates in Europe. Mm. So for a lot of bands, playing a Bang Your Head or a Keep It True, you know, playing 2 to 3 one-off shows a year is the only thing that they can do, both realistically because of what they have going on in their day lives, and also it's good enough without having them overextend themselves from an economic standpoint as well.
Yeah, well, it all ties together. It's just where everyone's at in life. I mean, I really loved going full force and touring as much as possible. When you weren't touring, you were getting together and writing and never ending music. But that's not the way things are at the moment, you know. Mm-hmm. Try to and move as close towards that as possible. And that's why at the moment I'm doing multiple projects, and it's kind of like I'll take every opportunity, and then you take everything with a grain of salt, realizing we're going to do the best we can with this band, but don't just limit yourself to that, you know?
Right.
You know, I'm trying to get a couple things to float, because while this band is not doing anything, then I'll work on this project. And that's the reality of things at the moment.
Mm-hmm. But it's been like that for a while, especially for you, no? Because between, you know, you've always kind of been in multiple projects at the same time for the most part. I mean,
I kept going from project to project. I really don't like it. I don't prefer it, but that's how things have panned out.
Yeah.
You know, like Society One was down for the last year when Matt was working on his new movie that we'll talk about soon. That's mm-hmm. About to see the light of day in a couple weeks here on Thunderflix.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting back together with the Overloaded guys during that time. You know, this is a great opportunity to do a show. And then at the same time, out of nowhere, White Wizard reached out to me, and I was like, great timing.
Yeah.
You know? And so whatever project like rears its head, and if the timing makes sense, I'll go for it and just try and make some shit happen. I do think it's real important to constantly be moving and just still remain active. Like, it's so easy to just sit back and then years fly by. You lose all your chops.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know how to step on a stage or like get your gear working. I mean, shit, actually, I've been like working on like a bunch of different gear setups.
Right.
Like working with a lot of amp modelers and just trying to get them to sound good, because like doing fly-in shows with with Overloaded.
Right.
Definitely not Void Vader. But anyway, like, it would be a lot better to go there and have some sort of transportable amp modeler that I can like plug directly into the PA or plug into a portable power amp or run it through the effects loop. There's a lot of options, all right? Mm-hmm. Just to have a consistent, good sound rather than just borrowing an amp that may or may not work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a realistic thing that a lot of people are doing now, since so many shows are one-offs and you got to fly out. But during that time, you got to kind of like work on these different modelers and try and get a sound that's like as good as my old Marshall that was great, but I can't bring on a plane, or became unreliable, unfortunately, one tour that really broke my heart, you know. And like the days not touring with in a van and trailer at this second, real quick. Another thing that got me thinking about like just trying to rework my rig was when Society One did the tour with Static X,
mm-hmm.
and none of the bands had a physical amp and cabinet. And so they just like show up, and everyone's in like different transportation situations. A couple guys, some bands are on a bus, some bands are in a bandwagon, and we're in the van and trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Society One, we're the opening band, and like all the props are on the stages, and there were a couple shows where there was no room for our amps. We had to figure it out. Like, the amp was basically where the security guards are standing, you know? the bouncers, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, yeah.
And, or like on side stage, or like Jimmy couldn't even bring his bass rig. He'd have he's our bass player in Society One. So, and then like using the real amps, and then like we were using wedges. Everyone else had like amp modelers and in-ears. So like that's the reality of a lot of shows aren't even set up for like analog amps anymore.
Right.
Or if they are, it's like a big pain in the ass. So I've been investing time in like trying out different, like I got a Line 6, I got an Amplitude, like Tonex pedal I just got, I haven't even had a chance to dig into. Like I got some friends that have the Cortex, some other people have the Kemper. What else? The Fractals. I got a neighbor, I just played on his Fractal, which like blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, like it wasn't, but he worked on his tones, you know.
Right.
Hope I'm not boring you, but that's like stuff that I've been putting effort and energy into that kind of keep you relevant or creative and like just still like working with music, you know. Mm-hmm. like finding tone. It took me so long to find a good tone, like years and years when I was a kid, you know. You start with like a practice amp, and like I had like an amp that didn't even have built-in distortion, you know.
Right.
And then you get your first distortion pedal, it still doesn't sound like Master of Puppets, you know. And so you know, you got your, and then you finally get your first half stack. Mine was a Crate solid state. Real tinny. My buddy had a Marshall, and his was like, it was an old Marshall, I think it was like a JMP. Like his sounds so much thicker and fuller and warmer and nicer. Like mine is more shrill and painful, right? So like, oh, tube amps. Yeah, okay, that's the way to do it. Like, you don't even know this stuff back in the day.
Right.
When you know, I was a kid. I think there's a lot more, like with YouTube and people talking, there's a lot more knowledge out. But now the big thing is, I mean, those tube amps are big, they're really heavy, they break the tubes. I did have some issues with tubes on my Marshall last time that, like, I think I bought a shitty set of tubes that, like, crapped out on me on a show. Like, you replace the old tubes that need to be replaced with a new shitty set that got ripped off, I think, unfortunately. Anyway, bought some, like, boutique tubes, but I think they were used, and I think they were on the end of their line.
Right.
And it really backfired on me. It shit the bed, like, during a gig, and those dudes got all pissed off about it. It's like, fuck. But anyway, yeah, man. So like this chasing of the tone. And then I went through a Mark IV, which is the Metallica amp. Like that was in the 90s, like 95. And that was great. I had that for a while. And then, you know, my buddy and I, he actually was a bass player, somebody we were jamming with. And when I was in this band in Detroit called Inner Recipe, and he had the Marshall JCM 800. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is, you know, it was better than my Mesa Boogie Mark IV, the distortion sound. And so it was like fate. I went to a pawn shop and there was one there for like $500. And I still have that amp. It's here in this blue case.
Oh, wow.
And now it should be good. Actually, I did jam with it with White Wizard with John and Chad one day. They're like, there's the Marshall. There's the sound. There it is. And it is like I plug right into this and that's the sound. And by itself, it's like, it doesn't sound, it's like in a band setting, like the tone just cuts through and it's so nice and thick, but like perfect. It's incredible. It's weird how that happened. It took me like years and years to find that, you know, and that was so good for so long. And it was on like the White Wizard record. It was on the Gypsy Hawk record. Was it on Void Vader's record? I don't think. Void Vader, I think we did use it for the Stranded album, but when we did the other two albums, we used like Ulrich Wilde had an amp, and then Michael, he had some amps. Okay, but anyway, the Marshall was really cool, but then it became unreliable, and I think that was just bad tubes, but then that happened twice, and then that got me all freaked out, like I can't rely on this, and then so I got an Engel, but then when I went on the road, I'm like, we're an opening band. So I've been working on amp modelers. Yeah. So like always we just like working on shit to make stuff better. So you can still play. Anyway, that's a trip down tone world.
Well, that's cool. First band I was ever in, everyone had crates as well. So I know what you're talking about. was, mm-hmm. Early 90s. It was what people could afford when they were starting to play. So you had your crate full stack, you know, you thought you were a big deal. And then, like you said, you know, the guitar started getting, you know, other stuff. I remember the guy was playing with got an Ampeg because Brian May used an Ampeg and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I hear you. So,
yeah, that's what's up, bro.
Yeah. You mentioned Society One. I will say that I signed up to Thunderflicks. Just because I saw that the documentary was coming out, and I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. You know, it seems like it has a lot of content that I'll watch. So
I would think that you dig it a lot. Did you see some of the other movies they have coming out as well?
I haven't seen that. I did check out, for example, the Kitty documentary, which isn't available in Europe. So I was after that for a while because I've actually interviewed all four members of the current lineup.
All right.
So I was interested in seeing that.
When I was in Gypsy Hawk, we played London, Canada.
Okay.
And two of the girls of Kitty came out, the drummer and the singer.
Yeah, the two sisters. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah,
we
played
that show. So it was when we toured with Ailstorm, and then for some reason, Warbringer was on that show.
Okay.
And they played before us. Anyway, just like sometimes that happens where like two tours combine, and then you have like a super show. That happened to us in Houston, and when Orange Goblin was on tour with Holy Grail.
Oh, wow.
So it was like us and Valiant Thor downstairs, and then Holy Grail and
Orange Goblin, you said?
Goblin was upstairs. Yeah. So it was like that particular night, they had two shows that combined them as one. So that show, like I said, Warbringer was on the tour, super thrash, pirate metal, we called ourselves boogie metal. And then the girls from Kitty came out.
Yeah.
So it was like, that was pretty cool, man. Like out of nowhere, London, Canada.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, man. And so you were talking about, because the Kitty documentary, and I was checking out, Thunderflix last night. Okay. And they have some, like you said, it's for a heavy metal fan. It's pretty cool. So it makes sense that they'd be hosting the Society One movie that Matt's been working on for the last year.
Yeah. What's your involvement in that documentary? I'm assuming that you appear in it at some point.
I appear in it. It's minimal. Okay. Like I'm in the band now. Right. And I'd say, first of all, I haven't seen the movie. I saw the trailer, and which I assume you have too. And I saw one trailer before that. And then Matt sent me some unreleased footage that he must have worked into the movie, which was pretty cool. Like, that was like 10 minutes of it. So I haven't seen the movie either. So I have an idea of what it's about, and which is about Society One, but and they were like, Matt's an extreme guy, and he's like he's pretty competitive. So like even in hedonism and like, you know, backstage antics and all the bullshit like that people love in from the Dirt movie or the Dirt book, you know, he was like full-fledged, full bore. And like his background is you know, he started off in porn.
Yeah.
And he started directing porn movies. His father was a porn director from like kind of back in the day. When I say back in the day, like the 70s, the 80s. And I don't know his whole history, honestly, but like he comes from a very different background.
Right.
And Matt came out here and went to Musicians Institute. He's a guitar player. Not a lot of people know that. I don't even know if he'll mention that in the movie. You know,
right.
It's funny. Like he's, you know, like he gets really focused on what he's interested in. He might not even mention that or care to mention that. I think it's cool. He went to MI and he's like an accomplished guitar player. And so he writes a lot of the music and the riffs and stuff like that. I don't know if anybody even knows that. But so moving on, the movie, like, it's going to be pretty wild. And Society One was a really wild rock and roll, sex, drugs, rock and roll band from back in the day. And it, and even back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it got them in a lot of trouble. And it got a lot of people that were associated with them in a lot of trouble. This is before cancel culture.
Right.
And so it kind of put a bit of a, like a dark horse, a black cloud, like a pariah, like Society One, kind of like being associated with Matt, like, mm-hmm. like people were scared to associate with him, and still are in some senses. So the movie will drag into that. And then, like, there's been a lot of people working against him. He's pissed a lot of people off. He's made a lot of enemies, you know, and like, it's that's just the reality of life. And so there's some people that have a bone to pick with him and have basically tried to keep him down, you know, they've done everything in their power to not allow him or whatever Society One to get some opportunities or to get thrown off some things, you know, which is right. how this industry works a lot. It's super small. So if the gatekeepers get pissed off at you, if they team up against you, that shit's a reality. And I think you'll go into that. So even like the movie coming out, he had a damn near impossible time getting anyone, a PR company, to sign up to promote the movie.
Okay.
And it's like a business thing. And they all said, no, 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 which I don't know exactly why. But that's another example, because like to me, like nothing is even possible to be shocking. You know, like you can go on YouTube and I watch documentaries about Anal Kant and Gigi Allen. And this is on, you can go to Tubi, you can go to mainstream platforms and see all kinds of shit. Like there's different types of censorship where like you'll watch like police videos and they'll censor the gunshots. There's words that they'll, so there's like, it's a never ending flow of what is censored and whatnot. But as far as subject matter goes, I was really shocked that company after company refused to take on Matt's movie. But it's another real life example of people being scared or don't want to, or it's like out of animosity, or, you know, like there's people that just don't want to work with Society One. He's definitely up against things time and time again. So it'll be interesting. The movie is coming out. I think it's coming out the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. What a beautiful holiday to release. And I'll watch it that day, too.
Cool.
And we're going to be having a release. Thunderflix is going to have a release for it. Once again, because rock and roll is, it's just like a fly by the seat of your pants industry, or like, I don't even like the word industry. Okay. It's not even an industry. It's a thing. It's like a force. All right.
Okay.
But any, like there is no industry. It's all destroyed. It's crumbled. You know, it's like everything is guerrilla warfare. And like, so that is being determined, and there will be a venue and a date, and I can't announce either. It's coming very soon.
All right.
Right? I hope I'm able to make it. Right? I hope I'm in town. Like, so, but I'm really stoked about it, and Thunderflix looks really fucking cool. So,
yeah.
Like, I'm glad he found a company that was willing to release it. Matt has released, like a cool movie. One was about their bass player, Dirt. And it's a story of his life. I watched it on YouTube, so I assume it's still there. But I know that Matt wanted to have it, like, he wants to see this thing be pushed, you know? I mean, everyone can release anything DIY. And he put a shit ton of work into this, you know? You should talk to Matt sometime. Like, he'll go into it. I can't tell you what he went through, but I know he took a year off to put this movie together. He'd been compiling footage his whole life.
Right.
And you know, your original question, what's my role in it? I was a guitar player in the last tour. We went out on tour with Static X in 2023. Static X, Fear Factory, Dope, and Mushroom Head was on quite a few of the shows too. That's my role, you know, which is actually pretty minimal. I'm the guitar player now, and we are working on some new music, which is great. That's what I like to do. I like to be parts of original bands. I like to write music. I like to help shape the music. If I hear something that can be better, I like to present something, a riff, an idea, an arrangement, solos, what have you. I like to be part of that, you know, the more the merrier. I love the idea of like the organic, but everyone in the rehearsal room, someone comes up with a riff, the drummer starts playing the beat, the singer starts singing something, you know. I've had that happen in the past. That's not how things have worked. Everything is more like on the, you know, like individual, you know, submitting tracks through email, bouncing ideas back and forth. Whatever the process is, I'm there to help contribute it. And then also, like, well, it's Matt's, like, Matt will start this and then I'll offer some ideas. Or I'll offer some ideas and, like, maybe he'll be like that one, don't like that one. So it's every band, every project is different, you know. I might have the song, oh, my God, like, the video we shot. Jesus Christ, help me out, man. You might have to cut this part out. I hate having brain farts like this. Da, 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 da. Can you help me out, Victor? What was the name of this single we released?
The Fight Within.
Thank you. Okay, on The Fight Within, I Jesus. But yeah, my contribution to that was a guitar solo. He's like, we're recording this song next week. And I sent him some ideas. Good, I like that, you know? That was, and then we went into the studio and we recorded. And that was it. And then I heard it one way, what I recorded the solo over, and then what ended up that I was playing over was totally different. So that was a shock. That was, and it turned out well. I was expecting like rhythm guitar underneath it, and all it was like drums and guitar kind of cut out, you know, which just pretty rare for songs to do that. I thought that was really creative. Kind of ballsy. I mean, the guitar solo is just naked, you know. Normally when you're riffing and writing a solo, you're kind of working with the rhythm. Mm-hmm. It's kind of part of it. They meld together. And the solo is written for the rhythm and the whole vibe. And then to change that and have it just be stripped down, that was very shocking. And then there was like a song that we were working on that I think might be in the movie. And then like I came up with a riff that I thought was going to be over the chorus, and then he took the riff and then he made it its own part. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's really cool. So this is a different way of like how from what I'm used to writing. Mm-hmm. And I like it. And it's always like really quick. It's always like nothing's going on. All right. And then life is so complicated that, hey, if there's a need for it, I'll work on it, but I'm not going to waste my time, you know, like life is just too busy, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm gonna write 20 ideas in the vein of something that aren't gonna see the light of day, that's that's not a good use of time. But then all of a sudden now we need a bunch of stuff, you know? So it's like that's how it always is. Like you'd like in a perfect world, you'd like to just reach back into this idea vault and just pull this stuff out. Like, well, fortunately, I got this, this, this. Which song do you want? You know, mm-hmm. But everything is always a rush. Always. And that's how it's always has it always been. Well, that's how it is now. I can tell you that, you know, it's like there's nothing going on. Oh, we need a song. Like and all of a sudden you're just like you shift everything and your focus. And you just try and make something as cool as you possibly can within the time limits that you are given, you know, the deadlines. And so that's not how the rock and roll story is. You know, the rock and roll story is like you're constantly writing. And then once you're ready, you go in this. Fuck no, you're never ready, ever.
Right.
And you're always pushed. But I will say this, like that's, you know, that seems to be just the way that things happen. When you are given this endless timeline, it always gets procrastinated. It always gets watered down. And by the time it comes out, it sucks. And the most simple example is like the Guns N' Roses record that came out a million years ago, but it took a billion years to write. And then when it finally came out, everyone was disappointed, you know, and it'd be written, and been rewritten like 20 times. Like that's like the most simple example I can give of that. But this, it happens in all bands, and like they just never get around to it. When are we going to release the album? Oh, when we're ready. Yeah, it just never happens. You kind of you have to have a fire to get this shit done. It happened with Gypsy Hawk, where we had a lot of the album written, and then all of a sudden, things happen in bands. Eric just took off, Eric Harris. There was like two songs that I didn't think were done, you know? And so me and Andrew and Ian got together, and it's so like Galaxy Rise. One of the examples was the intro of Galaxy Rise. It was just like this riff that do-da-da-da-da. It just did it like four times. Mm-hmm. It was boring. Just like that's not done. That's like, and so we wrote this buildup, and I'm glad we did, you know. But we had to. We had like we were leaving to record in a couple days, you know, and so and that's an example of like finishing something, you know, not in an ideal situation. Like it it worked out. And it is kind of cool when. It does kind of inspire some different aspects of your mind or your playing or your writing. You know, I know everything can backfire. You could be short selling yourself. Maybe it would be better if you had infinite time. Like, I guess everything would be, but it isn't. That's not how shit works.
Yeah, it was interesting. I watched the video earlier this week where Kirk Hammett was explaining how he records his solos, and he said flat out, he goes, usually my first 3 to 4 takes are the best. He goes, because once I start to take the solo apart and start to analyze the song, he goes, kind of the fire, the spark that you wanted to make something really exciting, it kind of goes away because you overexamine it and you try to do it over and then over and over. So it reminds me of what you're saying there with like the GNR stuff and other stuff where you take too long with it. You think about it too much and it just, the spark is gone by the time.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of validity to writing things of where you're at that time. I never used to really appreciate that. And maybe when you're younger, you just are who you are. And you haven't even had a chance to go through any sort of stages or, you just got popped out a little bit ago. You just learned how to play a couple minutes ago. And like, so yeah, where are you at as an artist now, you know, like that's kind of part of the art is just like, all right, let's do it. Let's not take forever and then overthink it. Then, you know, re-edit and edit it. It's like, this is a presentation of what's happening this second. So though I respect that more now because that's how shit happens.
Yeah. The Fight Within, we were talking about it before we started recording. It's a song that, for me, it gets stuck in my head. And once I start to hear, like, Matt's voice, or I start to hear, like, your solo in my head, it's something that I need to listen to. And it's not that I need to listen to it once. I need to listen to it a bunch of times. And then it's finally, like, out of my system. But I mentioned this to you off air. It's a song that has the right amount of heaviness, has the right amount of musicianship to it. And it just makes you think, well, why wasn't this song bigger than what it was? I mean, it delivers on so many levels, at least to me personally.
Yeah. It's a great song. It's funny. It's a very pretty song, which is not what Society One is known for. Or like, there's so many aspects to Matt's writing. Society One in general, it's been around forever. It has a huge back catalog. That song in particular, yeah, I think it's a great song, and I think the video looks really cool too. Yeah, Matt directed the video. There's some cool lighting effects. There's a whole aesthetic to it. It's just like a performance video in a warehouse, but it looks cool. And like the song itself, you get a good vibe about it. You know, I consider songs like that to be a ballad. I was hoping we were going to do it live on the road, but it didn't get put in the set. You know, I bought for that song, I borrowed a friend's 7-string guitar, and I wrote this solo on a six string guitar, you know, but it's right. in B, you know, it's a regular seven string. And then I bought a seven string guitar. Cause like Matt had a seven string guitar that he wrote on it, but it like sucked. So I was like, I can't play this thing live. You know, it's like cutting my hands up, you know, it was like a super cheap Jackson or something. So I got one, but we have been working on the most recent song that he sent me is seven string. Well, so maybe it'll see the light of day. At least it is in the demos and shit. Okay, back to the song. Yeah, it's a great song. Guess what? People don't even fucking care about music anymore. That's what's interesting. You can write an awesome song, but who's playing it? Nobody. Check it out on YouTube. The video is awesome. Listen to it on your streaming platform, you know, buy the MP3 if you want. But like, what are people doing? I don't know. Like, music is, I love it, you know, and I know some people really do too. When we played live, most people had no idea who the fuck we were, and they loved it. It was cool. They were getting engaged. When we played live, Matt and I would go back to the merch booth, and people would come up, and selling a CD is, I'd say, probably the souvenir of it, you know, because I do it all the time. You know, if there's a band I really like, and especially if it's the lineup that I'm like, this is the lineup that recorded the record, I buy the CD. Or the album, whichever. Really, albums take up so much space. I just like the CD and have them sign it, and it's cool. It's a cool memento. It's really rad, I think. But do I need it? No. I listen to it on Spotify.
Right.
You know, that's my platform. Whatever your shit is, dude. You know, whatever it is. So it's a great song. It's awesome. And yeah, I would think that people would dig it. It's actually a very pretty song, you know, like it's actually really commercial if you ask me, super mainstream, you know, good, heavy, sounds good. It's like the production is fucking awesome.
Yep.
You know, I recorded, that wasn't done just like in you know, like your fucking bedroom or anything, you know, and it was mixed by, I believe, a guy named Zeus mixed it, who's like got a huge name in the production world. It's great, but like, you know, I think Matt even said like he was expecting more. He did that and a song called God to You. We shot two videos, right? And in like the response to them was like not chart topping, and it wasn't, you know, it was like underwhelming for his expectation. So I'm glad it's there, you know, like it's out there. And what's cool is that if people want to listen to it, they can always listen to it. And it's a more modern, like it's not a song from 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're going to be writing music now, but like one of the reasons that Matt's doing the movie is he's like, they don't fucking care about music. Not to the extent of it really making waves. If Metallica and the Rolling Stones can write a song, release a song, and no one gives a shit, then why are they going to release? They're not going to give a fuck about your song either, you know? And that's kind of a black pill attitude. You know, I get kind of like frustrated with it. I'm like, but you're a band. That's what you do. You write music, you release music. That's what you do. You can complain about it all day long, but that is a reality, you know? People aren't, the numbers aren't there. You know, life is a very numbers stats sort of game. And like, if like 20 billion streams happened on it, you know, it would, then the people pick up on it, you know, that's the algorithms, and then actual people paying attention to the algorithms, you know, what's human and what's AI anymore is like very confusing at times, but you get it, man. If something gets like a billion streams, and more people are going to, oh, what is this? I have to check it out. You know, whether it's good or whether it's bad, you know, it's like whether it gets those numbers. And so Matt's doing the movie because he thinks more people are into movies, documentary, you know, stuff like, he's like really into the shock aspect, you know. I'm like the guitar player, you know, that's the shit I'm into, like the music and stuff like that. But like, I've always been into extreme metal. I've been into like punk rock, you know, I saw Anal Cunt live, you know. I had like Gigi Allen albums before it was, you know, I want to say before it was cool, but like back when it was like back in the 90s and shit, like I was there when like metal went from like Judas Priest to death metal, the fucking grindcore, like I've heard it all, you know, like I've seen quite a bit of it live, you know. I definitely would not be down to have shit thrown at me like at a Gigi Allen show. I mean, there's like points where things get so fucking stupid that, you know, it's extreme, you know, and like I wouldn't see any value in it, but some people really do. Oh my God. You know, like people love that stuff. And Matt's into the extreme. He does the suspension, which is putting the meat hooks in your skin and hanging from it, you know, and he's got, I believe he still has like a Guinness Book of World Records award for that. And he's into theatrics and that's why I was getting back into the movie. He was like almost competitive with his shit. Like he'd have to explain it, you know? So I can roll with stuff like that. Like I don't get offended. You can't say shit. Normally I'm the one that says things that people get. Oh my God. I'm like, what did I even fucking say? I'm the most normal person in the world. I think I'm a fucking sieve, you know? Like, but then people are like, your opinion is just obscene. And so like, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with like Matt, whatever he's trying to push or say, and it'll come out in the movie, whatever he's trying to push or say. But that being said, I think a lot of times in music for Society One, as the guitar player, I had to dig back. This band's been around forever. I had to dig back in the back catalog,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like I'm just presenting. All right, here's the songs. Learn them. You know, do your interpretation of them, which for me, I always pretty much like what you hear on the album is what I'm going to try and convey. I like to do that. If the song's good, I don't like, I need to rewrite and put my stamp on it. It's like, no, like mm-hmm. if it's awesome, that's how I want to play it. But there does also at the same time, there is the reality of like, I'm a different guitar player. Shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like what I'm getting at is there's bands that like some bands I think have gone astray and gotten way too YouTube-y guitar player, like shred progressive stuff. And I'm like, that's not what I'm into, man. If you want that, like you better get one of those guitar players. And some bands paint themselves in a corner because they hire these super shredmeisters that no one can play except fucking dork studio musicians. I don't even fucking like that stuff. I think it sounds like crap. No one likes it. It doesn't stick in your head. Okay. And I like solos that you can sing along to that are cool. And there's a slight element of technicality to it. Some, not much, not much. And the stuff that's all. So what happened? These bands like hire these super shred nerds. And now they've painted themselves in the corner because they have to get a guitar player that can only play that shit. Most guitar players that can only play that shit are dorks and assholes and don't even like to tour because they like to just play their guitar in their bedroom and just play as fast and sweepy, shreddy as possible. So you see what I'm saying? Like I am a certain type of guitar player. I have the ability to convey a certain sound. If that's what you're going to do, we're going to have a problem. And well, don't hire me. I'm not your guy for that, you know? So like, but it sucks when a band paints themselves in that corner, because if they're going to play their back catalog and people are expecting that, then they can only have a certain type of player.
Yeah.
So, but guess what? Society One doesn't do that. So that's, I guess I lucked out, right? Or I'm the right guy for it. So going back, I already lost my train of thought. Like I was presented a whole bunch of songs and it's okay, here's the songs. It's like on me, I kind of went back over time after I learned the set to, what's this band about? Mm-hmm. I never even listened to a lot of their shit ever, actually. No, I wasn't familiar with it. I had to go back and research it. And then so I found like all these cool songs. Like there's a lot of pretty ballads and stuff, you know? And then he has like some new metal, like Cold Chamber shit that I'm not as into that style. You know, that was like, you know, the new metal rage was really big, and that is a big part of this this band. But then he has like stuff like super fucking fast. I was surprised this band is a lot heavier than I thought it was from like its reputation and what they were pushing. I'm like, this is like it's tuned to drop C. You know, we got a couple songs in B, but they didn't used to have that. But there's, I mean, I guess that's a pretty deep tuning. I know there's bands that go lower, and we can talk about how I think actually bands that go super low don't sound heavy at all to me.
Right.
Because like a lot of the bands that play so fast, like black metal doesn't sound heavy to me at all. At all. It sounds proggy. It mm-hmm. sounds like, you know, like low tech Dream Theater, you know, and it's not heavy. I don't at all to me, you know? So like, fucking A, man, there's like, it's, it's tuned in a heavy tuning. They use a shit ton of distortion, you know? And I was like, yeah, this is fucking heavy stuff, you know? Like, it does have the groove that conveys. You play it loud and live, it's pretty fucking heavy. So they have an industrial side. He has this, like, nu metal cold chamber side. He has some, like, I don't want to call it. There's some Pantera Sabbath shit in there.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about the ballad side. And then there's, like, yeah, there's some stuff that's, like, well, it's not going to be death metal. But it's not thrash metal. But it's, like, way faster than I thought. We're learning a new set because we're getting ready to, like, play again. And there's this song called Lord. And I'm like, what? This song fucking rules, man. This is a great song. It's like, yeah, it's great live, you know? And I'm like, cool. But, like, that's, like, kind of got a ministry thing, which is industrial. But then way even more. Like, then it goes heavier and faster. I'm like, yeah, this is sick. I like it. So there's a lot of aspects to the music. And the music is worth checking out, you know, as much as, like, I supposedly people don't listen to music, but I swear people do.
Mm-hmm.
People do listen to music. So it's like a give and take. Do people listen to music or don't they? Yes, they do. Is it enough for the mainstream media to give a fuck and have people swooping in and, like, wanting a piece of it? Because they think if they buy this and they can resell it and make money, is it a commodity like it was? I don't know that it is at all. We'll see, though. I mean, the idea is there. Like, it has value. It can have value. You know what I'm getting at? Like, that's what an industry is. Like, does it have actual tangible value to where, like, okay, I can book this band and people will come out and then the band gets this amount of dollars and I get this amount of dollars. That's where things get kind of lame, but that's, like, it becomes a headache. It's very stale, like, talking about numbers and stats and figures. It's fucking lame, but that's how some shit works. Well, that's how the world works a lot, you know? So the idea is to get some music out that goes somewhere and fucking makes a fire and gets noticed. Like, yeah, the idea is not just to have, like, 14 people listen to it.
Yeah. You know? I get it.
You know, 'cause that only has so much value. Like, that only goes so far. It is what it is. It could be a great song. 14 people listen to it. You know, that's as far as it goes. If 100,000 people listen to it, it'll go further. It will reach more people, and the music itself and the band will physically travel more places. More things can happen. They can do more podcasts.
Yeah, there you go. I think a lot of it, unfortunately, has to do with the fact that the age group that we're in and that we're dealing with, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't as probably tech savvy as they need to be to keep up with bands, and other people just are too lazy to do it.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're getting at. And there are people who, like, are set. They're good.
Yeah.
Like, with the music that they have, they know what bands they're going to click and look for. I think the hardest part is finding it, because there's nothing worse than wasting your time and going, this sucks. Listen, 30 seconds of something else. This sucks. By the time you did that four times, you've already, like, it saps the energy out of you. It's not a good time. You know, people. So I understand how, like, sitting, I'm going to research, find some new music. You know, that's not realistic. That's your job, Victor. And you're supposed to get that to people and say, this band is good. Check them out. And then, like, many people do it. And then they tell some people. But yeah, tech savvy, I guess, also too. Some people, like, I guess I figure it's such basic technology. Like, it's a platform, Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube. Who the fuck doesn't know how to YouTube? Yeah. But maybe some people aren't even into that. But, like, our age demographic, well, yeah, I mean, they're, you know, that is what it is. I'd say setting their ways is a good way to put it. And then, yeah, if you're appealing to people who are setting their ways and don't give a shit, yeah, that's a pretty tough sell.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Like, there could be some, I don't know what, I can't speak for other people. Does it appeal to other people other than just ourselves? Are we just playing for, 'cause we're dying off, literally. I mean, people our age are dying. And like, is that just it? Or does it appeal to more young, I guess, other people? I hate even using the word younger. That just sounds, that's something old people say. This appeals to younger people. But well, like, I would think that the music, I would hope that the music is cool for people to check out, regardless of how old they are, you know?
Right. Well, I see it in my house where, you know, my kids will listen to a lot of the stuff that I'm listening to. And then all of a sudden I'll hear certain stuff coming from their room, you know, where they'll check it out and they'll really enjoy a certain band. So if you're exposed to certain things, I think that people of any age, it's possible that they'll enjoy it. The problem is that a lot of people, I think you said it perfectly, they're set in their ways. Well, if I can't buy a CD, then I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to.
Now that you can still buy a CD, by the way, go buy a CD. So that's like a bullshit excuse.
Right. So, but you've got that, you've got people that'll say, well, nothing good has come out since 89. It's like, dude, right. Okay. So I get what you're saying. You're set in your ways, as you mentioned, but there's always good music coming out. I mean, on my podcast, we do a monthly album review where we talk about stuff that has come out each month that we're into, just because we want to keep promoting new music.
Because that's awesome. You're doing that. That's what it takes. It's got to be fun though. Like, it's just too much of a pain in the ass. And the fact that most people don't even leave their house anymore. And I don't even think that's a generational thing. I think that's across the board. Like, people are like just stuck in their little bubble. I think it's even harder for them to. Radio is not playing anything new. That's set. That's like a playlist that's just on repeat, because that's its market. That's what it appeals to. All these things are just platforms that all do the same thing. They just play music.
Yeah.
So what else do you have? You got podcasts. You got documentaries. See, that's where Matt was getting into. Like, sometimes you enjoy watching a documentary. You get into, like, this band is interesting. I'm intrigued. I'll check them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what Matt's going with the movie Society. You know, this Everyone Dies the movie out on Thunderflix, February 14th. All right. Take your girlfriend on a date. That was like the worst. Let me do that again. Out February 14th, Thunderflix. Take your chick.
There you go.
That's better. All right. So, like, that's, you got to get into it. It's got to be interesting. Like, I think a lot of the bands that we were into, you know, we saw them in magazines. Like, oh, that's, you know, you'd see they looked cool in the photos or the live shots. I had a story about them. Like, there was a whole culture. It captured our interest. There was Headbangers Ball to check out. And then you take it from there, right? Like, so whatever gets people into it, I'd say that for new music, there's not as much because people don't have faith in it. You know, they don't want to spend their time promoting something that they feel no one cares about. They'd rather write about one of the legacy bands. And for me, it's different because I don't want to ever read another article about the legacy bands. I have no interest. It's fucking boring to me.
Right.
So, like, to each their own. I do go see shows, and I see like well-attended, packed shows for bands that aren't legacy acts. And to me, that's what's cool and that's what's fun, you know? But it is what it is. Like, the bands I like tend to play clubs, which are better shows, by the way. Seeing bands in clubs and theaters, that's the experience. Like, seeing bands in arenas, I think, sucks.
Yeah.
But to each their own, man. People will disagree with me that big time, you know? They're very different experiences. So, like, yeah, even, like, yeah, arena shows, like, to me, aren't even fun. So, but anyway, you know, that's the give and take. You know what I mean? Like, it's always best. Oh, I saw them in the club. I saw them in the theater. But then everyone wants them to be huge. Well, do you want it to be underground or do you want it to be huge? What's the perfect sweet spot? I mean, it's just all fluid, you know? It's like whatever works, you know? I just don't like things to be so – I don't like something to be, like, good and then just go nowhere and then just fall apart because no one listens to it and it can't go anywhere. That's sad. Mm. That's really sad.
Yeah.
So you're just working.
Yeah. A lot of this too, I think, has to do with the fact that you're talking about shows. We're talking about new music and stuff. A lot of it also has to do with the fact that that people are getting priced out of a lot of stuff. And actually the discussion of like instruments, I remember you were the first person to tell me, I'd love to have a Les Paul, but in order for me to have one, I have to pay X amount, which is so much more than, you know, so you want new generation of musicians to catch on, or you want to have younger people checking out shows. But back in the day for us, a show may have been $5 to $20.
Yeah, $5 for a club show. You and me, I think we're around the same age, and then $20 for an arena show.
Yeah, yeah.
Metallica Colt in 1989 was a $20 ticket. For pavilion, so for seats, you know.
Yeah,
man. Well, check it out. Like, and that's where actually, like, club shows and upcoming bands make sense, you know, when the legacy acts are charging hundreds and hundreds of dollars, which I don't know how anybody affords this. Because when I talk to people, all they do is complain about money and say how fucking broke they are. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if they're music head and they're going to a show, they're going to a legacy act show for insane prices that I didn't think you could ever charge for. So like, and people like thousands and thousands of people are doing it. It blows my mind. Right.
Yep.
So yeah, if you're into it, actually there's a lot of like seeing upcoming bands is cheap. Mm-hmm. So that's a great argument for it. I'd say like for kids though, the laws, like most clubs are 21 and up.
Yeah.
And I'd say that younger people are super broke, you know, like zero money, you know, like back in the day, I feel like younger people had enough money for metal. Like metal is supposed to be for like poorer people. It's not supposed to be an expensive boutique thing, you know?
Right.
But anyway, okay. So budget conscious, yeah, like seeing upcoming bands is the way to go. Even seeing shows at the Whiskey is like the prices have gone up from back in the day, but it's still way, like you can see an awesome show at the Whiskey for like $20, $30, $40
yeah,
for
a ticket. That's, you know? That's reasonable.
Awesome. It is. Yeah.
That's know? Like
that's a pro club too. That's not like a DIY punk rock, you know.
Right.
112-inch speaker vocal PA thing.
It's not at the VFW.
Yeah, man. They even have those anymore? Yeah, dude. So, money is a thing, but I feel like where there's a will, there's a way. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
If they're into shit, they'll find a way to do it. Also, like, things change. So, like, yeah, I feel like the legacy acts are kind of just, like, they're just they know their audience and I think they're going to ride that into the sun. Right. So if you're with them, they're what do they call? They're going to just like milk a horse, you know, they're going to just like keep riding that wave until people don't show up anymore, you know, and everyone's like aging out, you know, and going to physically just pass away, you know? So like there's new people, there's new shit for new people. Does it all have to be the same age? I don't know. Maybe it does. That, you know, which kind of fucks us. But like, I think there's, if you're into music, you can get into it and hopefully more people get excited about it. Yeah. So that's, and also that there's like budget wise for music instruments too. Like Gibson is like a legacy brand. If it's $3,000 for a Les Paul, there's a lot of other instruments out there that are as good. For much less money, you know?
Yeah.
Got to find it.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you're working on outside?
Yeah, there is. There's one thing. I'm jamming with the Overloaded guys again. And we're just doing shows. I would love for that band to just like write some songs, but I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think they're cool with doing an occasional reunion. It's going to be in Detroit. And I got a phone call over Christmas break, like, Eric, you know, this band, Bridge, dropped off the bill of this show. It's going to be really awesome. A bunch of bands from Detroit that were pretty popular in the local scene in the early 2000s, and they want us to take their spot. And these shows are like, they're like really well attended. We did one last year. They actually like draw, they can draw like hundreds of people, man. Like for a show nowadays, that's not like corporate or something. That's like, that's a really good turnout, man. Like people get excited and get stoked. So Overloaded, that's a band that I was in from like 2004 to 2008. It was right before White Wizard. It's really, we had like two records out. It's on all the streaming platforms. The band is called Overloaded, and we're going to do a set. We're going to do a show, and I'm stoked about it. The guys are stoked about it. We did one about a year ago. It went well, and this one should be better because that was like knocking the dust off the boots a year ago. We're going to do it again. And at the Token Lounge, which is my old stomping ground. I mean, I've played there a million times. I've seen a million shows there. John Anton is a great guy who's been, who's just like a part of Detroit. And so I would say if you're from the Midwest, come out, you know, like everyone's so bored in life. And like, yeah, come out to the show. Like, yeah, drive up from Ohio, drive out from Chicago, drive out from Pennsylvania. Do it. Have fun. Like have a, have a Saturday night in Detroit. Like Saturday, it is Saturday, right? Saturday, March 8th, 2025, Token Lounge, Detroit. Cool. And then it's Overloaded, Face, and Blasternaut. And we're Detroit bands that are getting back together and kicking some ass. And there's going to be a lot of people there, and it's going to be a fucking blast. Cool. That's another thing. And so those are the three things I got going on right now. Society One, kicking back into full swing. Matt's movie is coming out on Thursday the 14th. We're like learning a set right now and getting prepared. And we'll be writing songs too. Just wrote one recently. He's going to be putting out some videos and shit. White Wizard, we're jamming. Hope to do a show. Okay. And yeah, those are the three things.
Okay.
At the moment. I'd like to do my own thing, dude. It's funny that I've got, I do have a back catalog of riffs that are pretty sick. I go over them. That one was great. What the fuck? You know? And it's like, kind of like, do you just like present them to a band? Do they fit in with the band that you're jamming? I mean, Iron Knot was, do you remember the band I was in called Iron Knot?
Absolutely. The Iron Knot is similar to what I mentioned about the Fight Within. I can get riffs that, You were on bass there. There were just
I was on bass things, on that one.
Yeah.
So the thing is, like bands are fickle. Band life, the band world is very unstable. Anything can happen. It can be going great. One day, it's just gone. There's no safety net, and it just collapses. You know, regardless of how long or how short it's been, you've been in it. So it's like, part of me says, just do your own band. That's it. Everything. I mean, fucking Dave Grohl, you know, right. Everything. That way you don't have to rely on anybody. It's on you. But then, you know, it's like that I'm doing other shit and there's only so much time, you know. So one I'd like to get around to do. I think it's a great idea to do it. It makes the most sense, you know. Mm-hmm. No committees to go through. You and your computer write the stuff, record it. I'm getting better and better at recording, actually. Can send it out to like you can send it out to a guy to get mixed for a reasonable rate. Like you can put on hire a drummer, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I program all the drums, you know. Yeah. So I mean, it's potentially as far as the creative process can all be in house, you know, and it's realistic to do. But it just and then all of a sudden, but I'm doing other stuff. So that's one day maybe that'll happen. Find out maybe next time I talk to you.
There you go. That will be the next time we hook up to see what's going on in the world of Eric Kluber.
Yeah, dude. My rambling going around the world with my conversations, going jumping from topic to topic. Sorry. Yeah.
It's fine. That's perfectly fine. Before we wrap things up here, can I get you to do an idea? I haven't had you. I don't think you've ever done a video ID for me.
Really? Okay.
This is Eric Kluber, and you're listening to Victor Ruiz on Signals from Mars.
Excellent. Eric, I do want to thank you for spending all this time with me today, and look forward to everything that you talked about. I mean, I'm into every one of the bands that you mentioned. Even the ones that you let the name slip. If Eric Kluber was a part of it, I think there's a certain part of quality associated to at least the point in time that you were in those bands. So I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Victor. It's always good talking to you. And real quick, I mean, that's a reality of just like going from project to project and having limited time in things, and then time moves forward. And then you realize, what was the name of that song? What was the name of that record? What was the name of that band? You know,
right.
I mean, it makes it seem like, you know, like you're not invested or don't care about it. But yeah, forget stuff, and you look like a fool when you forget it. So no, whatever.
That's fine. As you're mentioning that, you get certain riffs in your head and you say, oh shit, that was Fire Eater. So all of a sudden you realize I need to check out that playlist again, because I remember digging that so much from the first time that you started sending me demos. So Anyway, on that note, once again, thank you, sir. Thanks to anyone that's watching or listening to this. And we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See ya.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.